Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue in with our wonderful group of panelists. Let me introduce them to you and I'll prove to you how wonderful they are. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. No, they need proof.
Yo, Joe.
Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Well, just fine.
University at Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo is here. And associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain, joins us.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm just great. Thanks.
Let us begin with the big story, which, of course, is making world headlines. And we welcome your comments, of course, on this. And I assume we'll be spending a little bit of time on it this morning, on this and all of the topics we talk about this morning. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Citing coup in the Ukraine, Putin reserves the right to use force. President Vladimir Putin, in his first comments since the crisis in Ukraine boiled over, said today that he saw no reason for Russia's army to intervene in eastern Ukraine at the moment, but left open the possibility of military action, saying that Russia reserves the right to use all means at our disposal to protect Russian speakers in the country's south and east if they are in danger. We are not going to fight with the Ukrainian people. I want you to understand me clearly. If we make such a decision, it will only be for the protection of Ukrainian citizens. And God forbid, if any of the servicemen tries to shoot their own people, we will be standing behind them, not in front, but behind. Let them try to shoot women and children.
I suspect what we have here is a little face-saving. The stock markets know everything. The stock markets are way up this morning, and they are sensing that there has been a standing down by Putin based on this. Look, he's got what he wants. He's got control of the Crimea. He knows that if he wants to ignite what some think has the potential for really becoming a very, very serious world confrontation of some kind, he goes ahead and does more. So I think he stops where he is. That's his signal, and that the folks out there understand that there's been a stepping down.
Do you think there'll be a partition and Crimea will go back to becoming part of Russia?
I don't.
But others.
Excuse me. I thought you meant Ukraine. No, of Russia. Yeah, sure.
Yes, right.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it'll permanently become part of Russia
without question in my mind.
The model for what's happening we saw in Georgia in the country of Georgia in 2008 when Russians went in to fight the Georgian government against Abkhazia, which was, like Crimea, a section of the country. And it remains an enclave separate from Georgia to this day. Putin has no problem at all fighting the Ukraine government. I think what's happened is he is bowing to enormous international pressure. The United States is one. Angela Merkel, with whom he has had a long relationship, is another. She is acting as a mediator. And then also there is the banking and the stock markets of the world, which you mentioned.
The ruble in Russia.
He is definitely susceptible to financial pressures. Will he keep the Crimea? I suspect so. I think Crimea wants to be part of Russia. It was never really part of Ukraine. Whether he'll attack further remains to be seen. We don't know who will be in the final Ukraine government. If it is a nationalistic, belligerent to Russian administration, you could see further military action, which he is now more than in good place to provide.
So at first, at least, it'll be an economic kind of a struggle.
That is the only weapon that you can use against Putin. You go in there with any kind of force on the grounds and you've got World War III. And
exactly.
I just don't think that's going to happen. I hope it would not anyway.
And the Times article that moved just about an hour ago, clearly furious, Mr. Putin delivered a version of the crisis almost entirely at odds with the view held by most officials in Europe and the United States, as well as by many Ukrainians. He described anti-government protests in Kiev as an orgy of radicals and nationalists, noting a swastika armband that he had glimpsed in images of the crowd. He also insisted that ousted President Viktor Yanukovych had never ordered security forces to shoot protesters, suggesting that snipers stationed on rooftops may have been provocateurs from opposition parties.
Okay,
he's
playing an old script here, and whether the old administration fired on shooters is something that the new government would like to find out. That's why they want to try the guy, which is also an old script. We saw this in Egypt as well. Wherever there's trouble and protesters are killed, you know, who knows what the operating orders were. So we don't know that. And he's not entirely wrong. His account is definitely laced with rhetorical devices. The man can speak. Provocateurs and an orgy of nice wording. But there is some element of truth in there. There are nationalistic and fascist elements in the government, among the protesters in the government that's developing.
Yeah. What Ukraine needs to do is somehow put in a government. You know, they have an interim government now, but establish a government that is not going to try to be in Putin's face and giving him the excuse he needs just to move further into eastern Ukraine.
I don't think he's going to do it. I mean, I think this is just too difficult for the guy. He's achieved a great deal.
It depends how he's provoked. And throwing out his man was a huge provocation.
Yeah,
but we don't know what's coming next.
Yeah, I want to talk about that man. We're talking about Yanukovych, because it turns out, I think, that he's been thoroughly discredited now. I mean, the state is broke. No two ways about it. The country's broke. They have found such extraordinary largesse, personal largesse on his part, that I don't think, you know, where they might have brought him back. And that's why his claim that he was asked to come in by Yanukovych it sounds kind of hollow.
Well, of course it is. It's his pretext,
sure.
And it also look how nicely that sets him up in negotiations that Angela Merkel, for example, wants. He can offer, okay, we won't bring him back.
Yeah.
We will give you that, even though I know that Putin does not like him. He didn't do his job. He didn't do a good job of it. He was very ham-fisted.
He was.
Now that Putin wouldn't mind that. Putin works with lots of thieves, but he didn't deliver what he was supposed to.
Could have been in the New York State Legislature.
But that's another topic.
We'll get to that in a few minutes.
Can I also say that I'm very interested in a move that the new government, the interim government, has begun with the old Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko behind it, to put governors in the eastern states.
Yes.
This is the area that's most likely to be
wealthy
pro-Russian.
Governors.
Very wealthy governors. These are oligarchs, which I work for a group that covers corruption. We use oligarchs as a euphemism for mafiosa. And these guys are now all in government at her urging. And what's she setting up there? These are people who are going to be very open to the blandishments of the Russians. I find that really intriguing, and not the sort of government I would want.
Hmm.
So, the poor Ukrainian people. That's what I have to say.
We'll talk about the U.S.'s angle in this in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support for WAMC comes from Edward Garbasek, Certified Financial Planner, Havoc and Wealth Strategies, Wilbraham, Massachusetts, providing customized financial retirement strategies for those approaching or in retirement. HavocandWealthStrategies.com. UMass Amherst Museum of Contemporary Art, presenting an exhibition by local artist Kim Carlino, featuring her own pieces in juxtaposition with selections from the museum's permanent collection. umass.edu/UMCA. And The Cheese Traveler, Albany, New York, featuring over 100 handcrafted cheeses, grilled cheese sandwiches and soup, Tyndale organic beef and pork, artisan pantry items, and cured meats. TheCheeseTraveler.com.
Thank you. welcome back to the roundtable and to our roundtable panel. As I said, we want to talk a little bit about how the U.S. And their involvement in this issue. Alan sent an article over to us last night from the Daily Beast regarding John McCain. And in the sense suggestions for how to aid the conflict in Ukraine and Russia. I'm curious as to what you think. McCain is saying tougher sanctions against Russia and its higher ranking officials, NATO membership for Georgia, expanded and sped up missile defense systems in Europe. And again, this goes to some of the, well, much of the complaints against the Obama administration of not being tough enough and not doing enough in this situation. So I wanted to open up that can of worms this morning.
Well, wouldn't it be a nice thing if Congress could not use the current crisis? I mean, this is a substantial crisis. It's being described as the worst crisis of the 21st century, international crisis of the 21st century. It's harkening back to the events that led up to World War II in some people's minds. Not quite that severe, but certainly it goes back and evokes the Cold War, which was a terrible period in world history. And you have people who are now criticizing the president, saying the president is weak. They're saying Putin doesn't, you know, he's not even scared by Obama. And there's a lot of rhetoric. I mean, it's a time when, you know, we really need to stand united. And it's unfortunate that people are going to try to use this for, you know, positioning themselves for the next, you know, national campaign.
Exactly. I think McCain. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I think McCain's view, and the article talks about this, harkens back to his prejudice growing up, living through, developing at a time when the U.S. was one of two superpowers, and then for a brief time, and not a very good time, the only power.
The only superpower.
We didn't do well at that, and those times, I think, were short-lived. Russia is coming back. We do not have the right to stomp all over the planet. And what he's calling for is scary. Although I am surprised that the president didn't kind of pull back the military cuts that were just announced. Remember, we discussed it here by Hagel last, and it calls for substantially reducing our military. I'm surprised that they're still out on the table. I was expecting those to say, let's hold off on that a while.
I think you might have been right. I share your surprise, but I think those are negotiating tactics with the Republicans.
Right.
You know, for the budget.
Right.
You know, I do think that, I have a different take on McCain than you do. It's even more dangerous. I think McCain really believes this stuff. You know, you look back on history, you look at the mistakes of the past, you look at appeasement during World War II, and it's easy enough to say, okay, you know, where does it stop? You don't stop them early, you're going to have to stop them later on. I truly believe McCain believes that. I don't know if that's more dangerous than what you're suggesting, that it's a political ploy. Because if you believe it, you're slim pickings on the bomb, you know, going down. And you know, he has immense respect from an awful lot of people because he's he's a former warrior. Who had been imprisoned and all the rest.
Yeah.
So I think the fact that he's out there doing the screaming gives life to an awful lot of people out there who are just not in a great position to know a lot.
I've been using the position, let's judge what's going on in Putin's mind by what we would be thinking if the same things are happening to us. And the things he's calling for, put missiles right on the border, enlist the countries right around you in a defense pact against you. How would we respond to that?
Right. I mean, we cannot be the provocateur here. And that's exactly what McCain is suggesting. You know, it's sticking it in his eye.
You know, Mike and Rosemary and Joe, I remember so well during the Cuban thing, after the Cuban thing, the American people really weren't given a lot of information. So, for example, part of the deal was we were going to get rid of the Turkish missiles. you know,
yeah.
the encirclement missiles. So, again, I said it yesterday, I say it again, there must be an awful lot going on here in these conversations with Merkel and Putin and, yeah. and Obama and Putin that we just don't know about.
Yeah, I think the whole world is in those discussions, not just Crimea, that's for sure.
Which shows how power has spread. It's no longer just superpowers. It's right. There's a lot. And you know, the place that has the greatest stake in this, besides Ukraine, is just Europe. You know, it's their crisis, and you know they have to step up, and I think they are.
I'd love to know what
really happened in those conversations.
No, I'd love to know if Ronald Reagan were the president right now, what he would be doing differently from Obama, since there's so much Republican, you know, pressure, and whether Putin, by the way, knowing Reagan, who is a lot more like him, whether he would have played with Reagan the same way.
I think Putin plays with everyone that way. I can't think of anyone that he has a single-minded goal, and I think it's the restoration of the power, if not the actual structure of the old Soviet Union. And he is going to take any world leader who thwarts that in the same way.
I don't know. I don't think you're right. I don't think you're right. I think
you think that he's treating Obama differently because he doesn't.
I mean, Obama
is the Republican
man. Yes,
right.
He's a sensible man. He's going to resort to diplomacy. He's going to do those things where Reagan, Arlo Guthrie, in one of his performances, said that during one of the crises, Reagan was sleeping. He says, "I like it when the president sleeps."
Reagan, of course, went into several countries he invaded and had no problems about that. Putin has an advantage over Obama, and really, again, I would say most other world leaders, because he is not afraid of confrontation, and that is a formidable personality trait. You see it in your own office if there's somebody like that. He generally gets his way. People like to avoid trouble if they can. He has no problem with it. And as I say, he has a very clear goal. He has unlimited money, which our president does not. He has no opposition to deal with. He can move faster and more strongly than Obama. So
he doesn't have a divided Congress.
Right. He does not. And he has measures to take care of anybody who wants to start dividing.
I'll show you divided.
So his strength over Obama is real, but it doesn't have to do with Obama's character. I'm sorry.
Liam wrote to us, I just want you to know, and said, something I hope people will avoid. He said, would you please read the following two articles? Well, we're not going to read them right now. So Liam or anybody else who wants to write in, you know, one sentence on each of the articles would be better than telling us to go read the article and give it some consideration.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversations with our panel. Roundtable at WAMC.org is how to get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back after the short break. Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Alan Chartok are guests this morning, and our panelists, I should say. And it is always time for you to chime in. All you have to do is go to roundtable at WAMC.org, type and send, and there you go. Let us go to some topics a little bit closer to home and talk about school aid. 4 weeks to go before the state budget is due.
That's right. The governor wants to bring in his fourth on-time budget and keep the record going. And there's a lot of angst. State advocates for state increases to education aid were in Albany this week. They were calling attention to the plight of some very severely poor school districts. They toured 16 around the state. Several of them are in the capital region. They would include Hoosick Falls, in Rensselaer County, Cohoes, and Albany County, and then the Amsterdam and Schenectady school districts. And these groups, which include the Alliance for Quality Education and the Campaign for Fiscal Equity, they met with members of the Assembly's Democratic Conference, where they got a lot of sympathy, a lot of support. They talked about how when they went to these districts around the state, they saw what they regard as educational resource deficiencies. They range from, the school districts have to increase class sizes. They're turning libraries into classrooms. They're cutting staff. They're taking pre-K programs and either eliminating them or making them half day just to save money. And this is because the state hasn't kept its commitment that it made a decade ago in settlement of a lawsuit with these groups. And they have been shortchanging the education in New York State, according to these groups. And they're asking for increased funding, which is going to be very, very difficult because the governor is trying to do a tax cap and reduce taxes around the state.
Do you guys remember Elliot Spitzer?
He was the governor, I believe, until 2008.
Yeah. Got into a little trouble.
Everybody has tended to sort of remember him as the love gov or this or that. But in fact, a big part of his program was doing more for every level of education in the state. It was one of the reasons I thought so highly of him. That message from Spitzer has been forgotten as we get a new kind of governor whose big thing in life is to do tax caps and to show New York is open for business. I mean, I'm not faulting him. I'm just saying it's an entirely different philosophy. But we really do need to. I mean, I think if you take a look at everything that needs to be done, you got to do bridges and things like that. But you really have to give the kids a shot. And to cheap out on education is not a good thing.
Well, I think there's a lot of parallels between education spending and infrastructure spending. That means repairing bridges and roads and sewage systems, et cetera. And that is that these are both investments in the future. And if you neglect them now, the cost in the future will skyrocket.
But if you neglect them now and you're a politician now, Mike, then it's somebody else's problem down the road.
Well, kicking that can down the road. You know, it's going to get even more tense, I think, today because groups from, I think Bill de Blasio is coming to Albany to make his case for his plan to fund pre-K programs in New York City, and that's by a surtax on people who make over $500,000, whose income is over $500,000 a year.
Well, that gets really interesting, doesn't it? Because you have this sort of incredible problem for the Independent Democratic Conference. For those of you in Vermont or New Hampshire who are listening to this or Connecticut, a bunch of Democrats, once again, split off and went to work with the and I think there's a personally, I think there's a shade of racism here, but it's another whole story because the Senate leadership is often black and largely black and of the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And so these four Democrats, so-called Democrats, go and make peace with the guy who have absolutely a different worldview than they do, who are the Senate Republicans. Now, if all the Senate Democrats, the regular Democrats, and the Senate Democrats and the breakaway collaborationists were to get together and vote the de Blasio plan, it would happen. The Democrats who are not affiliated with the regular Democrats, if it's not confusing enough already.
These insurgent or independent Democrats?
Whatever you want to call them. I call them collaborationists or whatever. Whatever word that is.
Collaborationists.
if they were to hold up their hands with the regular Senate Democrats, the de Blasio plan would pass. Now, if you're this guy Klein, who's the leader of that insurgent group.
Jeff Klein, a state senator from Queens.
Right. If you're Klein and you're the insurgent, no, from the Bronx.
And
he's going to have to turn around to all those people of color, of different ethnic groups and everything else, and turn around and say, by the way, I've been collaborating with the Senate leadership, Skelos, who does not want to raise anybody's taxes, period, because that's what Republicans do. And if that is the case, they're in a very tough spot, and they're getting primaried, by the way. Those guys are getting primaried. The real question is, because they bring home so much bacon to their districts, does anybody care whether they're philosophically not where they should be?
Jeff Klein is facing a possible primary challenge from Oliver Coppell, the former...
Ollie Coppell.
Right, and he was a former, briefly, a state attorney general, but he was also a senator for a long time, assemblyman for a long time representing
Every
the Bronx.
Time I say he speaks with a patrician's voice, he gets mad. Mm. But he's a very formalist sort of guy. I like him a lot. And it might be an interesting thing to see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're saying that Klein, because Jeff Klein has been in power and he's collaborated with the Republican leadership of the Senate. He's brought some bacon back to the Bronx.
And without question.
Not, yeah, and he's not going to be vulnerable. And, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether people care. And I don't know whether people know. I mean, you could go stand out in front of one of the buildings in the Bronx and say to the first 100 people who passed, what's the name of your state senator? And they would shrug their shoulders.
Yeah.
That could probably happen a lot of places.
You know. Yeah. Two words, Common Core.
Yeah. Common Core.
Well, it's...
Will it be stalled?
I think the governor is now going that way, and there's extraordinary pressure from the teachers' unions, from constituents all around the state in both sides of the both parties, and both in the Senate and the Assembly.
One of the press releases I saw, it was a legitimate press release where they said that because people were, quote, freaking out.
Yes.
That was an interesting thing.
Yeah, that's an official term.
It's been really amazing
to watch this. Well, I had no interest in it, but to watch the groundswell.
Well, if you were a teacher.
Exactly. They have mobilized. I think it's great.
And by Common Core, we're talking about the more rigid standards that New York and 44 other states have adopted to
math
elevate.
We're talking about Operation Bootstrap here. Mm-hmm. Means you have to take this incredible leap forward and say, okay, we're going from here, where we don't ask that much or we ask less, to here, way up here. And what
it's a big climb.
Nobody argues that it wasn't a good idea to raise standards. But everybody's arguing you can't do it unless you prepare teachers, unless you have the right kind of teacher to pupil numbers.
To paint the opponents as opposed to better improved standards is just wrong. It's the mechanisms that they're complaining about.
So something is going to happen. The governor had appointed a task force a few weeks back, which is supposed to report in June on how to adjust or make course corrections in the in the implementation of the Common Core. The New York State United Teachers wants it on hold for 3 years, which I think would just kind of slow it right down to the point of, it'd be difficult to get it going again. Yeah, it'd be a long time.
It's like affordable health care. You know, the bill's got some faults in it. People are freaking out. So you just slow it down and make adjustments.
Are people freaking out about affordable health care?
Yeah. Well, it's funny you say that about affordable health care because the one of the commercials that I saw from the opposition groups last night used the word botched rollout and made that connection to affordable health care. So it's certainly in the minds of the opposition.
Yeah,
they are making those.
Well, the program is good, but the implementation and the rollout has had flaws. And
the consequences for teachers, isn't that a huge thing that they're going to be held to account immediately? Like you lose your job if you haven't reached the standards, even though the implementation
And that's a big
is.
Thing for Governor Cuomo. That was a big part of the negotiations to let districts apply for aid, that they had to come up with a measurement system to, make teachers more accountable. And when the regents last month tried to kind of roll that back a little bit, he immediately got on them and they immediately reestablished that part of the program.
It's been a really interesting political thing to watch. Both sides have good points, and to see where it ends up, I'm very interested in that.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We have other issues to discuss. We'll welcome, as we always do, welcome your input. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike, Rosemary, Allen, and you. We'll be back after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Maya Kamal, Fine Indian Foods, makers of coconut curry and other simmer sauces by local cookbook author Maya Kamal, available at Adams Farragher Farm, Sunflower Natural Foods, and other food shops. MayaKamal.com. Mr. Reuter Plumbing, offering residential and commercial plumbing and drain cleaning services for sinks, drains, faucets, toilets, water heaters, and septic systems. The Hudson Valley.MrReuter.com. And Spot Coffee, Saratoga Springs, New York, a community-oriented cafe featuring fresh roasted coffee, baked goods, soups, salads, pizza, and more, spotcoffee.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. Many other issues to discuss, and this one is a fascinating article from the New York Times this morning. that state suicidal tendencies are evident before deployment, according to a new study. Amid growing alarm at the rate of suicide among members of the military and confusion about possible causes, researchers reported on Monday that most of the Army's enlisted men and women with suicidal tendencies had them before they enlisted, and that those at highest risk of making an attempt often had a long history of impulsive anger. The new research, contained in three papers posted online by the journal JAMA, JAMA Psychiatry, found that about 1 in 10 soldiers qualified for a diagnosis of intermittent explosive disorder.
I love that.
Isn't that great? As it is known to psychiatrists, more than five times the rate found in the general population. The impulsive pattern in combination with mood disorders and the stresses of deployment increase the likelihood of acting on suicidal urges.
Well, I got a couple of takeaways from this. I'll probably get kicked for this. But I think you're right. It's my turn.
Rosemary's mailbox is full. Alan, you're up.
Who joins the Army now? 1 out of 10 means there are 9. That means there are 9 others who join the Army to protect their country and to do this out of. See how careful I'm being about citizen stuff. But also that there is a significant number of people who join the Army who have anger problems, and this isn't the interesting finding. From this.
Well, I don't even know about anger. I agree with you because I think that when you, again, one of the takeaways for me was that, I mean, part of the job is to
have impulse, lack of impulse control.
Is to have weapons and to, if you have to, yeah. defend your country and to cause harm to others. I mean, that is something that some of us can do and some of us can't.
Can anybody forget? Again, my sage, Arlo, in Alice's restaurant, there is a point when he's sitting on the bench and he's been disqualified. you may remember.
Right.
And he knows.
Mother rapers,
say,
father rapers, right, the
says,
biggest of
the
them all.
And the guy says, what do you think? He said, I want to kill, kill, kill. And they say, you're the guy for us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so by its very definition of going into the armed forces, it seems to me that that is part of the makeup that you're looking for,
isn't
which is different than the explosive, intermittent explosive disorder.
Isn't that an age-old cure for boys out of control? You ship them off to the military so they don't get into trouble. For years we followed that
but
sort
as
of
well as an awful lot of people who go into the Army because it's the only way they're going to get to college. It's the only way that they're going to make. I mean, there are people who have patriotic instincts and who want to do this, and they're fourth generation in their family to do it. You do service.
Sure.
There's certainly an awful lot of.
We've
that.
Said all the good things. We're actually here talking about a bad thing, though.
Well, it would be interesting if there was a way to assess what this would have been like before the all-volunteer army.
Right.
Back, in the 60s when they were drafting people and they were getting them from a cross-section. Of course, then they were getting people who, for the most part, who were out of college, who fit a certain socioeconomic pattern.
Well,
presumably
from what they say, you would have had less people with these tendencies.
If you had a
draft. Mm-hmm. But we're never going to have a draft again, in my opinion, although that's a wide-ranging prediction, because nobody in control wants what happened in Vietnam to happen again. Because the reason that the protests were so great in Vietnam, in addition to the fact that it was bad policy, was that the middle class just said, no, hell no, we're not going.
There's a movement, and people talk about intellectually, it's not in Congress or anything, about restoring the draft. If you had a draft, you would not have what we saw in Afghanistan and Iraq, where people don't care. They don't even know who's being killed. They don't pay
attention.
Right,
it doesn't affect you or anybody in your circle. Right.
These are people who volunteer to go, and so is it really a sacrifice in the same way as being conscripted?
But this also raises another issue, an interesting issue, which is that when the kids came home from Vietnam, or the soldiers came home from Vietnam, there were wide reports of people, I certainly wasn't involved in this, but who really basically intellectually spit on them. they said, oh, you were bad people because you went to this war. And now you see that when JAMA, the American Medical Association Journal, puts out a prestigious article that says a lot of these people have anger management problems because we don't, when people come home, everybody says to them all the time, thank you for your service. We have gotten over that other stuff from Vietnam. Now along comes Jama. It may be intellectual, well, but in fact, it has something else.
I just wrote a piece about this. We called them baby killers after they came back in the 70s. And that all we now have had to expiate for that sin. Mm-hmm, and in the wake of 9/11, we rever and worship our soldiers. We put them on airplanes first. They get discounts, all of that.
We welcome them back.
We welcome them back. But we don't really take care of them.
The history shows.
I think it was before 9/11, too, by the way.
Yeah, I think
that was in the first Iraq War.
First Gulf War. Yeah.
Okay, but I was going to say that the history is showing that the protesters were not all wrong. Of course, not every soldier did this, and of course, not even most soldiers did. But there was an unfathomable amount of atrocity in Vietnam and other places. And we do not have an honest view of our military to either yell names at them or to worship them is wrong.
Okay. I'm going to say what you just said to us, which was, so let's get back to the core problem here, which
Correct.
Is people
suicide
and people killing themselves. So it seems to me, and to Alan's point a moment ago about soldiers coming home, where there was also and continues to be a great problem of suicide post-service, that instead of this study that says, well, you know, they come in this way, you know, what are we supposed to do? Well, okay, first of all, you take care of the problem. You have a better screening going in, and also you
support when they come out.
Absolutely. Right. I mean, that seems to be and which brings up a whole larger issue about how we deal with the mentally ill in this country and we don't have anything.
Well, why do so many soldiers come back from war from Afghanistan or before that from Iraq with such drug addictions? They're addicted to OxyContin and other things like that because they they've received those medications from their superiors while they're there because they're having stress problems. I mean, they're treating the problem.
The symptom, not the problem.
Yeah, they're treating the symptom, right? Exactly, and all it does is make the problem explode when they get back home and they no longer are under the care of anybody, and they just kind of go back, and that's why the suicide rate and the post-traumatic stress disorders are so great.
I would go back to my other point, which is we don't do enough.
Yeah.
When we send them, when they come back, we owe them more.
I would agree with that. I would say, though, that PTSD has gotten much more study and attention than it did. I mean, World War One. How would the soldiers who came back from, oh, my gosh. They
shell-shocked.
Were, yeah, shell-shocked, and that was it. It was just give them some space. So we've come a long way from that, not to say more is not needed.
Let's move on to other articles, if I can quickly bring this up, which I'll see my page closed. I think I'm having your issues here, Mike. Everything was good.
Well, technology issues here.
That's right. Okay, here we go. I spoke too soon. And there we go. I wanted to talk about, do we want to talk about the budget? Do we want to talk about the budget that is landing today? I thought.
As you know, let's do that real fast. As you know, Andrew Cuomo wants his budget passed, and he has $32 million in his campaign account, and he can use it any way that he wants. And one of the ways he's doing it, it's very interesting, is to see a whole bunch of ads coming up on the television saying, you know, this is my plan. I want to cut taxes, because his guy, Drew Zambelli, his great pollster, is showing, very talented, is showing that that's what people want to hear. They want to
so
hear
he's about. He's high up in the polls, is what you're saying.
He's high up in the polls, I'm saying, and he's going to use television to negotiate with the legislature to give him what he wants.
Okay, I actually meant President Obama's budget.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Oh, that one.
That budget. the federal budget, which will be delivered today,
which will never get passed,
which is everyone is saying
there's
it's
no
dead
deadline
on arrival.
On that, right?
Linda Wertheimer had a great question this morning.
Wertheimer?
Then why are you doing it?
Yeah. Yes.
Why do you even bother?
Oh, you do it because you set up a negotiation with the other side. You put yours on the table, they put theirs on the table, and you start to trade horses. And we call that period the trades when people start, as I've said before, doing Boardwalk for Vermont and Avenue. Mm-hmm. That's what happens.
So So this is the start of the process, but it does give some inclination of where we're headed or not.
Sure. I mean, if you get a guy, one of the things he said this morning, it was great, that Obama has in there is that he wants to give tax breaks to the poorest people in the country, to the working poor and to people who are young, people who were. Well, of course he's going to say that. And, you know, then back comes the Congress and says, well, let's have a.
And how would he pay for it?
Yes, yes. Well, they're going to say.
Get rid of some tax break that people who have investment funds. Sure. Get or something like sure. that, and it ain't sure. going to happen.
Yeah. Roz writes to us, this is back to the Ukraine issue, and we just have 2 minutes, so I just want to end with this. Last night on PBS NewsHour, Stephen Cohen of NYU mentioned that last November, when the protests first began, Putin offered to work with Europe to help the Ukraine with a mini Marshall Plan to bail them out. This was refused by Europe and the U.S. He sees this as the root of the current crisis. Any thoughts on this? Thanks for a great show.
A mini Marshall Plan.
Yeah,
from Putin to Ukraine.
Putin then had Ukraine. He had to deal with them and was just trying to appease the EU. The EU said no, thinking that they would get a government as it did, responsive to it and cut out Russia. So I think that's a really good point. This is a place to sit down and both sides start working and make Ukraine the center rather than the battleground.
Right. And Bill writes, by the way, whenever you talk about a study, you need to read the study, not just talk about what the newspaper reported. Most of the newspaper reporters, that's like you guys, most newspaper reporters, even at the Times, don't bother to look at the validity of the study. I beg your pardon.
We'll call him.
On this, I'd be interested.
Get his
so
number.
Call him.
Get
that's
his
what
number.
Well, no,
yeah.
That's what he says. How about having a soldier on the on a guest or a family member of a suicide? Well,
I
we have nothing but
a compelling topic to pursue and dig deeper on.
We are out of time. I want to thank you very much for being with us. We'll be back tomorrow on the program with another panel discussion. Rosemary and
Helen will be back.
You're going to be, yeah, we'll
see
how it goes.
See
you in the next 24 hours. Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank
we
you.
Will see you soon. Mm-hmm. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.